I have five poems. The first one, the name is To Design a Face. I've read this to a few people, but not to an audience. As we go along in life, we have landmarks. And these landmarks may be very small, but they accumulate. Many of us, when we grow older, they amalgamate. They become a body and part of us. And for this poem, this person, when he grew old, amalgamated his landmarks and finally discovered who he really was. You got me now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not sure it's better, but okay. To design a face, you must saw through a bough on the north side of a great alder on the wet side of an autumn day. Watch the tree twist and bend toward its phantom limb, its bark peel back to an ivory sheen, dripping sap from its eyes. Listen closely with your ear against its cheek to hear its cries. Collect the falling leaves and place them in your pocket for tomorrow with regret. By God, you must regret what you've done. Bear in mind that she bore your child on an empty street. The wind caught them both in a portrait of mother caresses her flesh and blood in snow. You will watch his self-consciousness, his reaching out, his search for his own place in life, his faltering in his final days on the terrible things he'd been moved to do through the years to prove his worth. To design a face, you must cross bloodshed field to the wreath where you fell. She will lie beside you with the prospect of being together forever. She will find a strip of sod to cover her and think of what you must surely have been through. She will wake you gently and ask. You must stroke across a canvas with a swath of decimate red, brushed over by a sudden ray of light, the breadth of a great score with the force of youth's magic horn. Then command yourself to grow old and cloister. The postman will hand you a letter with a small paper stamp from the widow next door. She loves you. You'll take it. You'll hurry with your shadow through the streets, in the moonlight, to the sandbox, in the playground, in the park. You'll draw with a twig each furrow in your face. You'll whisper all the poems you've practiced to prepare for the birth of this moment, this enormous event. Maybe if you hold your applause for the end, I'd appreciate that too, because it sets me off somewhere. It makes me want to sit down. Okay. The next poem is called House Call. Now, you know what I did? I typed all these introductions out because I knew I'd forget everything. So if I read some, don't mind. When I was young, a few of us would make house calls to people in the slums who were either too disabled or too poor to come to clinic. I feel both sad and angry that these conditions might be thrust upon us again. This poem is meant to share with you my visit that in many ways is typical of those we used to make. House call. Carpets of roaches sniveled and sexed on the walls in the dark. with a sudden flip of a switch, with a racing light, they cowered, frenzied, flew for the cracks, down through the gaping hole in the kitchen floor to a godforsaken basement where no human cared to go. Last month's grits clung to the spam pan grease on the stove. Empty tins bathed in their cutting stench, and a TV ranted through the house, morning, noon, night, stuffed with chic fashions and wealth. A lonely crucifix hung above his bed, with a lonely Jesus who suffered to watch him. But accustomed by now to the squalor in which the dying man had to swim, always alone, in a pool of rancid desperation. On a table, as on a mountain peak, capped with virgin snow, on that table in his living room lay a splendid chessboard, soldiers armed and proud and ready, never used anymore, hardly ever spoken to by hardly anyone who hardly ever came to call. Next one is called The Corpse of a Solitary Word. The reason it's called that is because last night, Michael and the rest of us had a workshop. They went over this poem and rewrote it for me in some ways, and which is for which I'm very grateful. Tonight I'll inflict it on you. Here we go. This poem is about a young woman who is dying. She conducts a monologue with death. In the monologue, she brazenly dictates to death the terms of her demise. To the corpse of a solitary word. Oh, death, now we meet. I, with a string of luster around my neck, and you, ruler of chaos, with your sting of hubris through the gulags of hell. Death, I command you, stand up wherever you are, that I may tell you the ways with which I wish to hold your hand. Come, find me with your cunning, dress for me in a pleated shirt and proper suit, boutonniere, suave, scented, so I may sniff you from amongst your impostors. Soon you'll want to adore me, seduce me with pettish strokes of joy and disbelief. You'll whisper my name, and I'll whisper some of yours. You'll burst with envy, melt my suitors, yearn and crave. Death, lay my wounds cleaned with maggots. Heal my crimes with your trumpet of lies. Convince me that my sins will not curtail my days, that you'll claim me not by greed, but by fancy, on some thread of pleasure, that I may live my wishes without the fear of time. Present yourself as my escort, with more wisdom than I, more worldliness. Tout me with pomp, beseech me. Help me to a tart, an hors d'oeuvre, a crepe, bonbon, canapé, petite haute... Roberta, please. petite haute cuisine. Ha, ha. offer me a cordial, a goblet of wine, an unction. Sound your flugelhorn, me, my oboe d'amour, spinning our devotion through merry pranks, bestial love, climbing vineyards to spark the arcs of the aurora with storms from the burgeoning sun. Grant me my totentanz, my symphony of the fantastique, macabre, lento, presto, lighter, wilder, a flaming dervish that urges us ever close to the marble staircase that sweeps us down and out our great hall to euphoria, to the seizures of the night. Lead me to fortune, fortunatissima. Feed me your soul in delectable shades of rose-petal dust. Lie close, calm my convulsions, soften my twitches, wipe the salt from my eyes. You'll have raised me a thimble to a stature beyond myself, beyond my power to imagine, an irresistible queen of abundance on the verge of her demise. The next poem is called Heroes. The Vietnamese conflict, I'll just say a few words that I looked up in the encyclopedia, but the Vietnamese conflict lasted from 1954 to 1975, 21 years. At our local VA hospital, I cared for a veteran who described to me his contradictions, focusing on his emotional distress, fighting in the fields on one hand, and the military pride in killing a dehumanized enemy. He described to me his paradox of final retribution for one's killing by dying, and simultaneously, the adulation of a dead soldier's memorial. Heroes. Grief can tear a brain to shreds, to burning black in the great white snow. Boots cracked, worn thin, can cause deep wounds with the weariness of a journey. Two boots can quarrel, marching together, each quicker to match the other's stride. Feet can rot violet, blanch with pain as it shrugs its way up one's legs and into the skin of the groin. Fervor warms the fingers for a while, but they creep on their tips, stiff and splintered, raw and peeling, yet glazed with pride for their kills through the night. Statues of death lie in their caskets. Memorials melt quickly to slush with the great white snow. I think I have one more.
That's good. What?
I have one very, very short one, okay? Lady, you're a beautiful lady. I've never loved a beautiful lady before. How much can I pay you to remember my name? I'll be gentle. And maybe you'll even look into my eyes and kiss me and trade smiles. Maybe you'll even cling to this evening for a while. I'd like that very much. Thank you.